The Upset Mama Podcast, coming in your ears every single day. So, as with a couple of earlier podcasts, this week I'm dedicating these to my father, who passed away on Wednesday. And I'm just going to be talking about, you know, what's going on with that and how I'm feeling and stuff. And I know it's not very entertaining for people who are regular listeners, but, you know, I think it's helping me. I can understand some people out there might be saying, you know, why don't you just stop the podcast and come back to it when you've dealt with everything that you have to deal with? And I can understand why they would say that. But I feel that talking like this is helping me. And, you know, I guess I could talk like this into a microphone and I could record it and I could then delete it and not upload it as a podcast. But I don't know if that helps me as much as getting out there for other people to hear. And there's also a part of me that thinks if I talk about this, perhaps somebody else out there who's going through the same thing or might one day go through the same thing, it might help them a little bit. Something I've learned the past few days is that it's amazing how quickly you can get things done when you need to. When, you know, calling up about all kinds of things, arranging a funeral and registering a death and all those things. And you always assumed, I always assumed that before this, that those things, I always found it, you know, amazing that people could arrange a funeral in like a few days or a week, but it can be done. And it's scary how easy it is and how quick it is. And it's weird to think that my dad lived for 70 years and suddenly we're coming up for the third day since he passed and everything's nearly done. And it's amazing that somebody could live for 70 years and all of their affairs and their funeral and everything could be sorted out in less than 3 days. I wonder if that is... my dad, you know, he was a great guy and he deserves all the praise and the attention that he gets from any of this stuff. And to think that his whole life could just be practically sorted out and finished, his affairs finished within in a few days or a week, it seems like that's unfair. I mean, it's good, I guess, because it means that we get things done quicker and we don't have to go on with it for, you know, months and months. And it means that when the funeral's passed on Wednesday, we can just hopefully start to try to get back to rebuilding our lives and just working on finding peace again and you know, getting on with our lives. But it's quite scary at the same time that your life, when you die, can be... The doors of it can be closed in a matter of days or a week. But I think my dad, wherever he is now, looking down upon us, I think he's proud. I think he'd be proud of how we've done everything in the past few days and how we've arranged his funeral. I think he'd be very pleased with it. And I think that he would... I mean, I know my dad. Before he died, my dad said, look, when I die, just throw me in the bin. Just throw me in the rubbish. Throw me out with the rubbish. And he was serious, you know, because he didn't want... He knew how expensive a funeral was. And he knew all the things that would have to be arranged. And he didn't want us to have to spend that kind of money and deal with everything. And he meant it when he said, look, just throw my body out with the rubbish. But, of course, you can't do that. And we wouldn't do that because... It's my dad, and he deserves a proper funeral and everything. We're having him cremated because that's what he wanted. And so it's all going to be over, you know. This time on, let me think, this time on Wednesday, as I'm recording this, it's 2:20 in the afternoon right now. And on Wednesday afternoon at this time, I'll be all ready. My family and I will be all ready and prepared. We'll probably be in the car on the way to the crematorium. And his service is at 3 p.m. And the minister was in today, and we spoke about the whole funeral and everything that happens. And I asked him a few questions, and he basically said that these services are every 30 minutes. So when you get to the crematorium, there's a waiting room for the family, and you wait in there. And then at the time of your service, you go in and you have your service. And it's about 15 or 20 minutes, and then you're moved on to the next room. And, you know, it sounds like I said, after he'd gone, I said to my mum, and I said, you know, it sounds like the fast food equivalent of a funeral service. You know, you're just, you're in one door, you move to another room, 15, 20 minutes later, you move to another room and then out the door, and you're just supposed to get out there and go on with your life. And it is just a small service. It's just family, very immediate family, because that's what my dad requested. And it's what we as a family are happier with. And I know that there are people, if we were to have a big funeral and have it open house and just invite anybody who knew my dad, I know there would be a lot of people who came because he was liked by a lot of people. And where we lived, he lived there for a long time and people knew him. And he was like I said, I think in yesterday's podcast, he was that kind of guy that people just took the time to stop and talk to. You know, you didn't just pass him in the street and say hi and move on. You actually stopped and spoke to him, and people always had nice things to say to him and about him. And he always had conversation to make with people. And there are lots of people who would want to come to the funeral, but his request was for just a private funeral with immediate family. And my dad deserves so much more. You know, I mean, if we were to open up a whole church and have a service there, it would be not necessarily, well, maybe packed. I mean, my dad knew a lot of people. A lot of people liked him. I don't know. But there would be a lot more people than just the family. And he deserves that, you know, but he didn't want that. And I think a part of him didn't want that because he knew that we would rather have just private, immediate family there. And so he requested that himself. He told us that that's what he wanted. But I think my dad would have liked a big, big funeral if he could have had the chance, you know. He would have really liked to... I mean, he always said he'd like to be at his own funeral. And I know people say that all the time, and it's mainly because you want to hear what people are going to say about you and stuff. But, you know, he would have liked to see all the people who turned up and what they had to say and what they were wearing and, you know, see all the people he hadn't seen for years. And it would have been nice if we were able to do that, but we weren't. And, you know, just a small private service is all we're having. And it's fitting for my dad. You know, the last time we're going to see him and be with him and say our goodbyes, it's just going to be family. The family that he loved and the family that loved him. So it's a fitting funeral, I think, and it's perfect. And, you know, I think 15 to 20 minutes is probably about long enough. The minister's going to be there. He's going to say a few words and a little prayer, and we're going to say some prayers as a family, I guess. And he's going to speak a little bit about my dad, and that will be it. And then it's just a case of maybe a few minutes just to think and say goodbye, and then back out into the world and get back out there to start the healing process and moving on and accepting the fact that it really is over there. And I have my clothing for the funeral arranged. I'm just going to, it's very traditional, it's very basic. I'm just going to wear a white shirt, black tie, black trousers, black shoes, black socks. And believe me, I don't wear that kind of outfit very often. And my dad, if he was alive, you know, he'd look at me. Oh, wait a minute. Give me a minute here. Okay, if my dad was alive, he would look at me and he would say, "You look like a silly bastard." Because, you know, that's just the way... It would just be a funny thing, but really, what he would say, he'd follow it up with, you know, "You look great, you look handsome, you've done a good job, you look good, you know, and that's nice." And I really do feel like we've done him proud with everything we've done, you know. So, that's the funeral side of things, and that's all sorted out now, and we've dealt with the money side of things, and you know, it's, you don't realise how expensive, honest to God, the price of a funeral. You always hear people say it's expensive to have a funeral, and you just take that as a given, but it isn't until you actually get there and you have to deal with all the paperwork and make all the arrangements and choose everything that you want and all these things, and you realise how much things actually cost. And having a look at the price list for everything, you know, we've got the bill, the statement, whatever you want to call it, with all the prices listed and what they're for and things. And Ironically, for a funeral, it's the things that you wouldn't expect to be expensive that are expensive. The coffin is actually fairly cheap. The urns are fairly cheap. The hearse, you know, fair price, I guess. But it's all the little things that you wouldn't think about. I mean, they've got a section there for everything that happened before we even went to arrange the funeral. My dad had to have, there had to be two doctors sign the death certificate, for example. £140 for that. And the money isn't important. You know, we don't have the money, really. You know, we're not rich, we're not well off. We're just a regular working class family with no savings and no money. And, you know, we're going to cope. We're going to manage. It's not the end of the world. We might have to give up a few things and save money in other places, but we're going to manage. You know, we're going to get by. But the cost of a funeral, when you just think that the cost of a couple of signatures, £140. I just think that's crazy, to be honest. I mean, it's actually quite good I'm talking about this, because this doesn't make me want to cry, talking about that. This makes me feel, not angry, maybe, but a little surprised, shocked, disappointed that the state, or the doctor, whoever it is that takes this money and demands this money, would demand so much for a signature. I know that if you go to the doctors and you need a signature for something like a passport, they might charge you maybe £10 or £20. That's reasonable. But £140 for a couple of signatures from a doctor's, it's just, those are the things that shock you on the bill. The coffin is reasonable, the hearse is reasonable, the urn is reasonable, and you think that's really all you need. But everything else is expensive. The flowers are expensive, the transportation of the body is expensive, the signatures, all the paperwork, all of that stuff is money that, before all this, I would have said is crazy money. Preparation of the body, you know, hygienic things and all that stuff, you're talking not just 50 or 100 or a couple hundred pounds, it's like 700, 800, 900 pounds for each of these things. And I know they have to make their money, but, I mean, funerals are so expensive, and now I understand, when anybody says a funeral is really expensive, I get it now, I understand, I've been there now, I've seen the prices, I've seen the costs of each individual item, and it is shocking. I took out life insurance earlier this year for myself, and because I decided when I turned 30 I should probably have, you know, some decent life cover, so I did that, and it's a good amount, so I know that if anything happens to me, the money will be there to not only pay for my funeral, but to cover everything that my family will have to deal with for a long time. So, you know, I'm happy with that, because unfortunately my dad, he had one of those plans which pays out very little money. You know, and it's, I'm not going to say it's a con what they do, but it was one of those, like, you know, those life insurance policies you see advertised on television, and it's like over 50 plans or over 60 plans, and you apply for, you're guaranteed to be accepted, all that kind of stuff. And you pay a little bit of money or whatever you want to pay, but you get very little back, really, because the older you get, the way insurance works naturally, I guess, is the older you get, the more chance there is that you're going to die. And so they don't want to pay out a load of money if you're going to die. But if you're 30 or 25 or 40, you get a better deal because you've probably got another 20, 30, 40 years to go. So it's quite disappointing that my dad's insurance policy didn't leave a lot of money. But, you know, it's, we're going to get help with the funeral costs. You know, there's a thing over here called the social fund, and you apply for that. And what you do is the estate of the deceased person pays what they can pay. And that will be my dad's life insurance policy. And that will pay a little part of the funeral costs. And then the state will pay for the rest. And I don't know if they pay the whole thing, or if they only pay a part of it and we have to make up the rest ourselves somehow. Or if they pay the whole thing and then we have to pay the money back. I don't know exactly how that all works. Nobody mentioned anything about having to pay the money back. But as soon as we saw the cost of the funeral and just the amount we had to pay up front, we have to pay a deposit of nearly, it was about £1,000 just for the deposit, and that's got to be paid before the funeral. And we're thinking, what? So we got right on the phone to the social fund to find out about this. We'd heard about it when I was dealing with my dad's money issues, and his things. We were told about the social fund and the funeral fund. So as soon as we knew the cost of the funeral, roughly, we got on the phone to them right away and applied for it. And that's all done now. And we've been told that we don't need to pay anything to the funeral director right now up front, because our claim is being dealt with elsewhere. We have to pay what my dad's estate has, and then hopefully the rest will be settled completely. If we have to pay it back, then that's fair enough. You know, we'll work something out with them to pay it back. But it's nice to know that there is such a thing as a social fund to help with funerals, because I'd imagine there are so many people out there who don't... You never... You know, death just, quite a lot of the time, just happens, and you're not prepared for it. You don't have insurance, maybe. You don't have savings. You don't have all this money, and suddenly you have to go and arrange a funeral, and you're talking thousands and thousands of pounds. And a lot of people in this world don't just have thousands and thousands of pounds laying around. Or if they do, it's savings that they've saved up over the years. They don't want to be having to spend it on a funeral, because they may have planned for what's going to happen when somebody dies. We'll need to take care of ourselves. And they might save up, you know, a few thousand pounds, but then they realise we have to pay a few thousand pounds for a funeral. So suddenly, all that money that you put aside to live on when the person is gone, it's gone as well. We didn't have any savings put aside because we couldn't afford to put away any savings. So we're having to find out the hard way that, you know, life is difficult without the income from one of the people in your family, one of the main contributors. My dad paid for practically everything that came in, the bills, everything that had to be paid, the rent, the council tax, the bills, you know, nearly everything. My dad probably paid about 90% of that. And you know what? I would give up everything I own and all the money in the world right now to have my dad back. But that can't happen. And you have to deal with that. I looked up online some of the things, you know, like dealing with death and dealing with grief and bereavement. And it had stages that you go through. And, you know, the first one is like denial. It's not really happened. It's not happened. But, you know, I think I went through the whole denial stage when my dad got sick. And then I think the other stages are like anger and depression. And you start to, one of them was deals. You know, you start to make deals with people like, I guess, God or the universe. And you say things like, look, if I do this, bring him back. If I give up this or I sell everything, just bring my dad back. Well, it doesn't happen. You know it's not going to happen. So I've not even really... I would do it if I thought it would work, but I know that it's not going to happen. So I've not really gone through that stage of making deals with the universe or anything for my dad to come back, because I know that's not possible. But I have said it, you know, I have said, look, I would do it. If there was a chance to travel back in time or have my dad back, I would definitely give up everything I own. I would live on the street in a cardboard box for the rest of my life, sleep there every single night, if it meant that every day I could go and see my dad. And these are the things you think about, you know, these are the things that go through your mind when you're laying in bed, when you're sitting watching TV. I can't think about anything right now except for my dad. I can't. I've tried to watch television and I just don't take it in. I don't enjoy it. I just, it's like, it might as well be switched off, because I'm not even taking any of it in or seeing any of it really. I'm too busy thinking about my dad, you know, and I can't laugh at anything really, and I can't smile, and I'm putting on a brave face for my family and people who are coming round and people we have to see, you know. I don't want to burst into tears, but I'm having to hold back so hard. The tears. I can always feel that lump in my throat coming when I know that I'm about to burst into tears, and I have to swallow that. And when I feel like I'm about to cry, I have to just take a second and just look away at something else, think about something else. I don't want to burst into tears in front of everybody, especially complete strangers. I wouldn't be ashamed of it. I wouldn't, you know, if it happened, it happened. It's one of those things. It wouldn't make me ashamed or anything. In fact, it makes me happy. It makes me proud that I cry for my dad, you know, because I loved him. And the fact that all these emotions and these tears are surfacing at all just proves to me how much I loved my dad. And if he was here to see this, he would know how much he meant to me and how much I loved him. And I believe, like I said before, I believe that he's there somewhere, and he can hear me when I talk to him, and he can see me, and he can listen to every word I say, and he can feel the emotions that I'm going through and the love in my heart. And wherever he is now, I believe that he can feel all of that pain and love, or mainly the love. You know, he can feel it now. Perhaps in life he wasn't told enough how much he meant to me, but now he knows wherever he is, and that helps me to think that. We have to go, and we're going to visit the body again. We're going to see the body at the funeral home, I think Monday or Tuesday, just before the funeral on Wednesday. And the last time I saw my dad was the night he died, and he was dead, and his body was just on the bed. I've said this already. His body was on the bed, just a sheet up to his neck, and his head was tilted to the left. His eyes were a bit open, and his mouth was wide open, and that was hard to see. And going to the funeral home to see him a last time is, I know it's going to be hard, but I think it will be better this time, because they will have done everything. So his mouth will be closed, his eyes will be shut, his head will be in perfect position. He'll just look like he's asleep. And at first, when we talked about it as a family, do any of us want to see my father at the funeral home? They have like a private room where you can go in and, you know, spend time with the body in the coffin. And when we were discussing it as a family, my first reaction was, no, I don't want to see it. Because the way I felt after seeing his corpse was awful. And it's still awful. You know, when I think about it now, and when I close my eyes, I see that face. And my first reaction to seeing him again in the coffin, for the first time in the coffin, to see his body again, my first reaction was, no, I don't want to see that. Because I was thinking about how painful it would be to see his body and to be there, and to know that he's no longer there, and it's just a shell, and it would be hard. And I was thinking about myself and the pain that would cause. But with more thought, I realised that to spend time with him again, even if it's just like that, would be better than nothing. And I don't want the last image of my father to be the one in the hospital when he'd died. So I'm going to go and see the body, have a visitation with it in the coffin, spend time with him, talk to him again, you know, say my final goodbyes, and then that will be the last image I have of my father. And hopefully it will be a nice, peaceful one. He'll be at rest. He'll just look like he's asleep. It'll be easier to deal with than the one I saw in the hospital. And so I think it's a good thing to go and see the body. And then we'll have the funeral on Wednesday. It'll be a final goodbye, and that will be it. But that last image of my father will always be the one in the coffin, which I hope will be a nicer image. I know it will be. And I'll probably break down. I think at the funeral I'm going to completely break down, and I'm a little worried about that, because I'm not somebody who necessarily likes to show my feelings like that in front of people. And my mum and my sister are going to be there, and the minister's going to be there, and we're just not the kind of family that does that in front of each other. You know, these past few days we've been strong with each other, and nobody has yet broken down in front of anybody else. Privately, I've been crying like a baby, and I think my sister probably has as well. And I've noticed a couple of times when we've been talking about things and dealing with things, each one of us has had that lump in the throat, and we've had to choke it down and hold back the tears. But being at the funeral, I think that's when it's all going to just come out. It's going to be floods of tears. It's going to be so hard, but it's something that we have to do. And it's going to be my first funeral, and I know that it's probably not going to be my last funeral. So if I can get through this one, I can get through any. And this time I'll have the experience of a funeral. So the next time I'll know better how it all works, and how to deal with everything, what to expect, and all of that. But I just have to get through this first one, and then plan on the rest of my life. And like I said, I'll never forget my father. I'll never forget the memories we shared, the happy times, the man he was, the things we talked about, the things we did, the places we went, the things he taught me, the things he told me, you know, everything I told him. I'll never forget those good, happy memories. And as long as I have those, I know I'll be all right. The minister said today the classic line, you know, that it sounds like a cliche, but time really is a healer. And he's right. I've experienced things before in my life that weren't as bad as this, didn't hurt as much, but I did, with time, heal from them. And even at, you know, at the time, I thought it was the worst thing in the world. And, oh my God, I'm never gonna, you know, get over this. But you do. And I guess death is the same. And our minister, he lost his mother not too long ago, so he knows what we're going through. And he was actually talking about his mother, and I could see that. I think he was close to breaking down himself at that point. So it's nice to know that the minister who's going to be... I mean, it's not... Well, I don't mean it's nice. I don't mean it's, you know, a nice thing that his mother died or anything, or he's been through it. But it's comforting to know that the minister who's going to be doing my dad's funeral has been through it himself, and he understands how we feel and how we're going to be feeling at that service. So he'll be able to word things and, you know, do things in a particular way that we'll be able to feel happy about. I think if you have a minister who deals with death all the time, but they've never really experienced the death of a close loved one themselves, then their words might be just the kind that you hear all the time. You know, I'm sorry about the passing and all these things, you know, people's condolences. And that's nice, you know, that's important that you receive those, and everybody's serious and sincere when they say it. But I think if people have actually really been through that, it means just a little bit more, because they understand how you're feeling. So again, you know, thank you to everybody who have sent emails or left comments or anything regarding my father's passing. That was very, very kind of you, very generous. And I've emailed a couple of people back because just to say thank you. And, you know, it helps to just talk about it in emails, you know, typing it out, and I'm sitting here crying while I'm typing things, but it's part of the healing process. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to look into like a support group for bereavement at some time, and I'm going to go along and maybe just talk about things, and I think that will help a lot. Because this is my first death, I'm going to have to find out a lot of things about how I feel and how I'm dealing with it. And maybe going to a support group and talking about things with other people who know exactly what I'm going through, I think that has to be helpful. It has to be an important part of the healing process. I might not do that. I mean, at the moment, that's something that I'm thinking about, but I'll see how I feel in another week or two. You know, I mean, right now, it's been less than 3 days since my dad died, and so it's still very raw, it's still very emotional, it's right in my brain all the time, in my heart all the time, and, you know, it's there every second of the day. But I'll see how I feel in a week, in a couple of weeks. I'll maybe, you know, after the funeral's all passed and we've dealt with that, and I've got to go out there and deal with other things and just move on and start rebuilding my life and dealing with things I have to do, maybe I'll find it easier to get on then. As I said before, my dad wouldn't want me to be upset. He wouldn't want me to be sad. He wouldn't want me to be mourning him. It's part of the process, you know, you can't help it, but he wouldn't want that. He said that. He didn't want us to be sad and mourning him. He wanted us just to, you know, get on with our lives after his death and just to be happy and do what we wanted to do, you know, and that was my dad. And so I know I still have a lot of crying to do. I still have a lot of thinking to do, a lot of healing to do. But I'll try and remember his words, that we should just move on. You know, don't forget him, but we have to get on with our lives, and we have to live our own lives for ourselves and not do anything in our lives, or don't do anything in our lives because of his death and how, you know, we're feeling about that. So he was that kind of guy. He'd be pleased if we... He would be very pleased if we all just suddenly, you know, moved on and got on with our lives and the healing started and we felt better. That's what he'd want. I know that. He wouldn't want us to be crying and sad and thinking about him all the time. My dad didn't know about my podcast that I do, but he would be... you know, if he had done, he'd say, look, keep doing your podcast, don't do anything, don't stop the podcast, keep doing it, don't delay it because of me, just keep doing it. And, you know, he's right. I need to, doing things like this, although I'm talking about my dad, it helps me kind of deal with the thing, you know, when I was making phone calls the past couple of days, although I was talking about my dad, it was, strangely, it helped me kind of take my mind off him at the same time, because I was concentrating on other things. I was concentrating on what somebody was telling me on the phone, and I was concentrating on the answers and the replies and finding the information and dealing with all of that. So although it was about my dad, it was also a way of kind of, you know, thinking about something else for that 5-10 minutes that I was on the phone each time. So if I could find things to do that just take my mind off it, then that will help a lot as well. I'm actually quite scared to do the things I used to do, you know, just even things like, I don't know, watching television or a film, and if there's a death scene, I'm just gonna, I don't know how I'm gonna react to that. It's gonna remind me of my dad and how he died, and he's dead now, and it's gonna be hard to deal with. I mean, when he was alive, none of that mattered, because I never experienced it. I never had to deal with it. I could watch those scenes quite easily. I mean, I could think about it, you know, what would it be like, but I didn't have the experience of or the knowledge of it, so I couldn't really appreciate how it would feel and what it would be like until now. And it's just little things like that that get you. It's not the big things, you know. The fact that he's died has, it's fine, you know. I mean, it's sad. I wish he was here, but it's fine. I can deal with that. It's a big thing. I can deal with it. But it's the little things that get you. Just as you feel like you're starting to kind of get a little bit better and stronger, the little things get you. Like, you'll have a look in one of the rooms and you'll see something that was my dad's, or a chair where he used to sit, and you'll see he used to be there, but he's not there now, and he's never going to be there again. Or an item of his that he used to use, and you see it and you think, my dad used to use that. That's part of my dad. That's important. And it's never going to be used by him again. And even something like, I went to the supermarket a couple of nights ago, and my dad and I used to go to there, the supermarket. And just that, being in the supermarket and knowing that I can never go there again with my dad, that hurts. Just those little things. And then it got me thinking about all the places we used to go together and all the things we used to do, and I'll never be able to do them again. And so it isn't the big things that are hard. I mean, they're hard to deal with in the beginning, and they're still hard to deal with right now, but they will get easier. But it's the little things that really break your heart. Like, for example, I found, we were clearing through some stuff today, and I found a receipt that I had. And on the receipt, what we do if a number of people get things, it was an old receipt, but what we used to do if a number of people get things is we write down what they owe. So, for example, you know, house, mum, dad, you know, me. And on this receipt, it had dad and an amount. And that was from a long time ago and it had been paid. But just the fact that his name was there, well, not his name, but the word dad, you know, to me, that was his name, you know. The word dad being on that receipt, that will never happen again. And that really hurt. And it broke my heart to see that and to think about it. It's the little things like that are really painful. Seeing his clothing, or where he used to sleep, or a book that he read, or an item that he used, such as, I don't know, his wallet, his purse, there were a couple of packets of tunes. You know, these are like sweets that you take when you have a sore throat or a cold. And my dad liked tunes, and he would, you know, take them even when he didn't have a cold or a sore throat. And there were a couple of packets of those at the side where he used to sit. And that is just hard. You know, he bought these sweets, and he's never going to have them again. And things like, he had a Kindle, and he bought a lot of Kindle books. He was the kind of guy who would buy, you know, instead of buying one book at a time and reading it, he would buy like a whole collection of books. So if there was a series of books, he'd buy them all in one go, and then he'd have them to read. And if, you know, a few months ago, he bought a whole load of, you know, books from a series, and or even a couple of series, and he never, I don't think, got the chance to read them all. My dad was a very quick reader. He liked to read a lot, but in the last 5-6 weeks, he didn't read at all, really, because he couldn't. I mean, he didn't want to do anything in the last 5 or 6 weeks. But just those little things, to think that he'll never read those books. He bought them, and they're there, but he'll never read them. And my dad liked John Wayne, and he bought a lot of John Wayne DVDs, which he did see, fortunately. You know, he bought these over the years, and he would watch them pretty much as soon as he got them, because he was a huge fan of John Wayne. And we still have all those DVDs in the cabinet, and they're all there, all my dad's John Wayne DVDs. And I'm going to keep them, and I'm going to watch every single one of them, from the beginning right through to the end. And I'm going to imagine that my dad is there with me, and we're watching these films. And I've never really been a big John Wayne fan. I've watched a couple of his movies, and, you know, I really enjoyed them, but I never really took the time to say, right, I'll watch more John Wayne. And they were all there, all these movies that I could easily watch. And, you know, I watched a couple with my dad, and we shared, we had a like for the same kind of movie. I mean, The Quiet Man, I love that movie, and my dad loved that movie. It's one of his favourites, because he loved Ireland, and he just loves the big fight scene, and the songs, and all that stuff. You know, he loves everything about that movie, and I love that movie. And every other John Wayne movie that I've seen, I know my dad loved. And that was the thing. I think I've never thought of myself as a big John Wayne fan, but I think I'm going to be, because I'm going to watch these DVDs, and every single one of them my dad has seen, every single one of them my dad loved, and it's going to remind me of my dad watching these movies. And so now John Wayne is going to be a part of my life in that sense, and that's going to remind me of my dad. And I feel like my dad always related to John Wayne. He always looked up to John Wayne as a hero, because my dad, I guess when he was a little boy, John Wayne was huge in the movies, and, you know, he was always the cowboy on the screen, and he was a big man and a strong man and a powerful man. And I think my dad wanted to be John Wayne. He may even have thought of himself as John Wayne. And John Wayne was one of his heroes, one of his idols. And that is important to me. So because of my father and his love of John Wayne, John Wayne is now going to become one of my heroes. And I'm going to enjoy every movie I watch, every book I read, every documentary I see, every television interview I see, everything that I can get on John Wayne, I'm going to enjoy from now on, because he was my dad's. And I imagine if I get unfortunate enough that my mum dies, I mean, hopefully a long time from now, you know, she's still in her 60s and she's very healthy as far as we know. And, you know, she's doing very well, and she's probably healthier than me, to be honest. So, you know, I'll probably do the same when my mum dies, in hopefully decades and decades from now. And everything she loved, I'll probably take on board, and I'll start to love it as well, just because it'll make you feel like a closer part of that person. So if watching John Wayne films and stuff like that makes me feel closer to my dad, then I'm going to do that, and I'll enjoy them. And just imagining him being there with me, watching them together, laughing at all the funny bits, and, you know, cheering on the hero, and, you know, just enjoying the film, that will be good. But anyway, you know, I'm getting up to 40 minutes now nearly, so I'm going to end this podcast, and there will be another one tomorrow, and it'll probably be another 30-40 minutes or whatever, but these podcasts will also become, I guess, a reminder of when my father died. And I'm not going to delete these podcasts. I'm going to keep them forever, and if I ever need to listen to them, they'll be there. And maybe, you know, 5, 10, 20 years from now, I'll be able to listen back and remember how I felt and how I sounded when I was talking about my dad and how emotional I got. And that will be nice, you know, to remember at that time just how much it affected me, my father's death. Because I think people, as time passes and you heal a little bit, I think people, They don't forget the person they love, and, you know, they're still upset that they're dead, but I think it becomes easier to talk about it, and it becomes easier to talk about your feelings and how you felt. And right now, if I even say something like, my dad loved this, my dad did this, you know, it makes me want to well up. But you meet people all the time whose parents died 10 or 15 years ago, and they'll say, you know, my dad loved that, and they won't well up. They might be fighting it, I don't know, but they don't cry, they don't look like they're about to cry, they have a smile on their face. And one thing my girlfriend said was, you know, what's going to happen is, right now, you're very upset, and you're sad, and you're going to remember your dad, perhaps how he was in his last few weeks, because that's fresh in your memory right now. But as the time passes, what's going to happen is you're going to start remembering the happy times, the good times. You're going to start remembering how he was, not how he became. And she said, you're going to do something, or you're going to see something, or you're going to hear something, and you're going to say, my dad would have loved that. With a big smile on my face, I'm going to say, my dad would have loved that. And there won't be tears. It will be happiness. You know, my dad would have loved that. That's a good thing, you know. And I think she's right. I think that's what happens. And my girlfriend lost her father, I guess it was about, what would it be now? She's 26 now, so it's about 7 or 8 years ago now that she lost her father. And so she's been through all this. And although I didn't listen to her before my own dad died properly and take in everything she was saying and take her advice, I regret that. But everything she's telling me now, I'm doing. I'm taking in. I'm going to, you know, everything she tells me. She's got the experience and the knowledge of what I'm going through now. And her words are very important. And if you are somebody listening to this podcast and you've been through this as well, then your words and your experience and your knowledge is very important to me as well. So if you'd like to share any of that with me, perhaps memories of your own father or mother or a close loved one that you lost, and tell me that it does get easier and that the happier memories replace the sad memories very quickly. And if you want to share with me your experiences of any of this, I would love to read it, because I think that as well would be helpful. But anyway, until the next podcast I do, which will probably be about my dad again, because it's very much on my mind right now, I want you all to take care of yourselves, and I hope that you enjoyed listening to this, and I hope that if you're not listening to these, that you're still sticking around, and you're gonna, you know, return to me when I get back to doing my podcast the way it was before. So right now I need this time to make these longer podcasts and talk about my dad. I need that. I need it. And I hope you understand. And I hope that it's not annoying to you, or, you know, I hope it's not boring, and I hope it's not putting you off me or my podcast, because I need this. But there will come a time when I get back to doing what I was doing, and, you know, I hope it's sooner rather than later. I hope that I can start to heal quicker than I think I will, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Probably what will happen is I'll start going back to what I was doing before, even though I'm not fully healed, just to try and talk about other things and get my mind back on track to what I was doing, and take my mind off the pain and the hurt right now for like 5-10 minutes, however long it takes for me to do one of those old podcast type of things I used to do. But right now, I appreciate your patience with me, because I need this. And if you are listening to every single second of these, then thank you. And that's important as well, and I appreciate that, I really do. And if you want to contact me with anything, or anything you want to say, maybe you hear me say something in these podcasts I'm talking about right now, and you want to tell me something about what you've experienced or whatever, then remember, my email address is upsetmamapodcast@gmail.com, but you don't have to write if you don't want to. It's completely up to you. So until tomorrow, or whenever, thank you very much for listening. Take care of yourselves. And goodbye for now.